Welcome back to the podcast with Tim Bradstreet and Tom Racine, and today's special guest, storyboard artist extraordinaire, David Alcock. You heard me.
Hello and welcome to the Tim Bradstreet Experience podcast, still unnamed at this point. I'm Tom Racine, your vague host, and I am talking to Tim Bradstreet, who's still in the depths of New Mexico. How are you doing out there, Tim?
Dude, I am so horizontal, it's not even funny.
You got in like at 7 this morning, right?
Yeah.
And it's like noon now, so you were probably up all night working, so.
I am reclined,
yeah,
in my bed.
Ooh.
I'm wearing a stitch of clothes.
Yeah, baby.
Use your imagination.
I am. I've seen it, and I can't unsee it. That's the problem. So
you bastard.
How are things going out there in general? I've been reading your log. It's been really, really interesting stuff. I mean, is stuff still going pretty well?
Oh, it's going fantastic. We had some camera difficulties at the beginning of last night, which set us back a little bit. Sorry, we didn't get in until 8 o'clock this morning.
Ah.
But aside from that, we got some fantastic stuff. We had Ron Perlman on set last night.
I was going to say, Mr. Perlman is there now. That's cool.
Yeah. Funny guy.
Cool. I can't wait. Hopefully we'll get the chance to talk to him. But right now, we're going to talk to David Alcock, who was the mastermind behind the storyboards for Dark Country and a storyboard artist extraordinaire. We're going to talk about him and his career and how he got involved in this. David, welcome aboard.
Hello.
David is coming to us all the way from Hertfordshire, UK.
And, that's right.
And he did want to warn us if there's screaming and moaning involved. Apparently, currently, England is playing Croatia in a World Cup qualifier. So it's amazing he's even here talking to us. So thank you for coming.
No problem.
So I want to... Hertfordshire.
I thought you were in Shaftesbury.
Shaftesbury?
I kid because I love...
don't start with this. We could go on forever with Shaftesbury and Alcock.
No one knows what it's like.
Bill
Hicks. It's all Bill Hicks.
We could go on and on with Shaftesbury and Alcock. Yeah.
We got to keep this under the R rating, at least at some point, so.
R rating?
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. If we need to, we'll bleep things out. That's no big deal. iTunes can be a little weird that way, but.
Well, I'm still recovering from Tim's introduction of lying on a bed naked.
We need to start off every one of our interviews asking what everyone's wearing. I think that'd be kind of a unique way to start a podcast.
Don't ask Tim.
That's so bleeding on tube.
That's why we don't do this on video. There's no video podcast here. Thank you. Please.
Thanks, fuck.
So I wanted to say, how'd you get involved in Dark Country? Because we talked last week with Ray Zone, and we talked about how important the storyboards were to this particular project, being a 3D thing. So how did this whole thing get started?
I was working on a movie here in London called The Mutant Chronicles, directed by Simon Hunter, and which, as you all know, Tom stars in. And I suppose I got to know Tom through that, because I was boarding it. I mean, Christ, I'm still working on Mutant Chronicles. Been working on it for about 2 years now. Started off doing concept art, then started storyboarding, which carried all through pre-production and through quite a lot of the shooting as well. And now I'm still doing concept art for the CG boys. But so I met Tom in pre-production and kind of got to know him, and we went out for drinks and sort of hung out a bit. And I think one day he just went, "Hey, Dave, hey pal, I got this horror movie thing, and gotta need some storyboards, and you want to do it?" And that was it.
Wow.
And we kind of talked about it one night. There's a really good bar here in London called Albanac, where they've just got every kind of Scotch whiskey you could think of.
The Scotch.
And, Tom, being a fan of Scotch as he is, and myself, we bonded over...
The Isle of Skye.
Sorry?
I said, and the Isle of Skye.
Yes, you mustn't forget that. So we kind of shared love of whiskey and talked comic books and movies and music and talked about Dark Country, and that was it.
Cool. I'm more of a space side guy. I don't really like the island malts, but that's me.
Right.
What was I going to say? I was just going to say, how did you get started in storyboarding in general? How did you get into the Mutant Chronicles? I'd see that one of your first things was The Virgin of Liverpool, which back in 2003. Well, that's good. Everyone's got to start somewhere, right?
That's actually what they called Dave.
Oh, it's just his nickname. I'm sorry. I thought it was
a
show.
Yeah, it's a movie all about me. It was a vanity project. I went to film school, came out of film school, and always wanted to work in movies, always, and I've always sketched and painted and drawn and done that kind of stuff. But I started in production as a PA,
mm-hmm.
Production manager, and all through production on commercials and music videos and corporate stuff, but always did the artwork on the side.
Mm.
And kind of started doing it for directors that were at the company, doing storyboarding, and then they started recommending me to other guys, and it kind of just grew out of that. And before I knew it, I was doing storyboards and figured, hey, this is much more my kind of thing than writing out call sheets and booking hotels. So.
Yeah, a little more interesting. Just a little.
A bit more interesting, much more me, so that's kind of how I got into it. But no, it's what I always wanted to do.
Looking at the Mutant Chronicles and Dark Country, definitely a horror genre type of thing. Is that what you're really interested in, or did that just sort of, this is the project you're working on?
Oh, no, I'm a massive, huge, huge genre fan. So horror, sci-fi, action, that's my cup of tea.
Right. I was looking on your website. It must be kind of interesting to go from, you know, designing something for the Mutant Chronicles to doing a sandwich for Burger King or something. I mean, that's it's got to be a little bit interesting.
Yeah, but you know, it's all bread and butter, as we say, and you've got to pay the bills. So commercials pay very, very well.
So talk to me about the process, especially in this particular case, working with Dark Country. How does it work? I mean, do you just basically get a copy of the script, you read it, and then you talk to the director? Do you work together with him a lot, or how does it work?
That's pretty much it. Normally, yeah, you get sent
the
script.
Yes, you just answered your own question.
Yeah, there you go. What do you need me for?
Thanks,
thanks for
coming. That's
yes.
Enough.
Yes, next. yeah, and I get the script, go through the script, kind of do my own little breakdown and try and find out, you know, how much needs boarding. I mean, most of the time it's pretty much just the action scenes or FX heavy scenes, but mm-hmm. Sometimes, like on Dark Country, you kind of need to board the whole thing, which is a lot of work, and then sit down with the director and go through it. And my process is kind of to sit down with the director and thumbnail it, and then take it away and do another pass on it and kind of do it up neat and keep going backwards and forwards, and invariably things change a lot as well.
I was going to ask you that.
A lot.
So the director's involved right from the beginning, or do you have a certain amount of autonomy at first? They basically say, go ahead and take a crack at it, and then we'll like refine it from there.
It depends on the director. I mean, I pretty much work exclusively for the director, and it's down to him, really. Sometimes I get given a really detailed shot list in huge detail. Other times it's kind of like, well, I kind of want this, but I want your input, so give me your take on it.
All right. How was it working with Tom Jane?
Tom was fantastic. For a guy doing it for the first time, for a first-time movie director, he was so clued up. He had the movie in his head. He had the whole thing there. He knew every detail, and it was really good fun working with him. But he said, you know, I want you to throw in whatever you got, throw it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost the most fun part for me, is the sitting down with the director, doing the kind of the brainstorming, the thumbnailing. That's the nuts and bolts of it. That's the fun, most creative part for me. So I spent 2 weeks up at his place in Silver Lake in LA.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks every day, just sitting there going through the whole script, page by page, shot by shot. We had little toy soldiers, little action figures, and a toy car and a map, and started acting it out and jumping around and acting out little scenes and then scribbling it down. And then I came home and spent a couple of months just drawing it all up.
Wow.
It was fantastic. And I think from what we came up with and from what Tim's been writing in the production diary, it's going to be a cracking little movie.
Did you guys know from the beginning it was going to be shot in 3D, and how did that affect your storyboarding?
Yeah, Tom always said to me that it's going to be 3D, but to tell you the truth, didn't affect it at all. It was Tom was always. It was never a gimmick. It was just another layer. There's a great movie there without it being in 3D. The 3D just takes it into another stratosphere.
Uh-huh.
But we never kind of thought, oh yeah, it would be great if the guy starts pointing and then the spike comes out and then this. We never storyboarded thinking, oh, what can we do because it's 3D. It was secondary to the story and everything else.
Hmm. Have you seen the sort of the 3D color Bible they've made out of this that Ray Zohn was talking about?
I haven't seen it. I've heard about it,
yeah.
But I haven't seen it. It'd be really interesting to see it because. And when Tom started talking to me about the technical side of 3D, and then hearing the stuff from Ray, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But the detail they're going into with the however many layers it is of from foreground all the way to back is just fantastic. And he's probably got the best as a 3D supervisor. He's probably the best guy you could have. So
right, right.
I'd love to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Tim, how prevalent have the storyboards been being used out there actually on production? Tim? Did you fall asleep, Tim?
Calling Mr. Bradstreet.
See, here I am trying to involve him in the conversation, and I get nothing.
he's gone all big time. He's gone Hollywood. He's making movies now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not even talking to Tim. We're talking to his assistant now. So, that's okay. Well, as far as I know, maybe we may have lost him. I don't know. I think I still heard him out there. But well, you and I can continue on. I was just wondering. I was looking on your website and at various things, and at this this whole Jonas Moore thing looks really, really interesting.
Yes, Jonas Moore. Yeah.
Sort of an animated graphic novel. I mean, it seems to be super multimedia. What's that all about? What's going on with that?
The guy who came up with it, Howard Webster, I think calls it a second generation graphic novel. Which kind of bridges the gap between comic books and live action and animation. So it's kind of tapping into the current online digital comics thing, but doing a whole mixed media, using real actors and real photography mixed in with some archive footage and illustration. Just a big mixed media kind of thing, yeah.
Is it, like, available only online, or...?
Hello?
Tim, are you there? Tim? I see him. His little bars are lighting up, but I don't hear him. We'll come back to Tim in a little while.
let him sleep.
Let him sleep. He doesn't even know. Yeah, so is it available only online? What's the medium for this?
I think... At the moment, there's a website, jonasmoore.com. It's still in the development stages, but there's a few teasers and trailers and stuff out. But I'm not quite sure where they're at with it, but it's still in development. Yeah.
So it's one of those things you probably work on a number of projects at the same time. How do you keep that kind of stuff straight? And you're going from one genre to another, and it's got to get kind of complex.
Yeah, but you have to be. Adaptable. I think I'd be foolish if I said I just want to do horror movies. That to limit yourself like that, much like any artist or creative would be. And it's interesting to move into different areas and do different things. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to move on to other things in direct? I mean, you want to direct? Do you want to get more into that, or are you sort of happy with where you're at?
I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. Of course, I mean, I'd love to direct one day, but at the moment, I'm just trying to be the best artist that I can, and I'm really enjoying it. So, but and if I could, I'd say, look, I just want to do movies. But unfortunately, especially over here, where there aren't as many movies made as over in North America, you've got to be. There's a handful of guys over here that just go from movie to movie to movie. I mean,
right,
that'd be great.
Right.
But, I don't know, maybe one day, but I'm still learning.
Life of a rock star.
Hey, okay. There he is.
Tim is here.
Sorry, I had to duck out. I'm on a cord. sometimes things must be done.
Gotcha. We just assumed you fell asleep.
Honestly, Tom,
here's the real truth. Honestly, Tom, when you called,
yeah,
dead sleep.
I figured as much.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you could tell.
The man is busy, people. Let's cut him some slack. Well, we actually asked you a question that I thought was vaguely interesting.
Fire away.
How important have the storyboards that David did? I know that, you know, they storyboarded the whole film, and then they turned it into a 3D Bible. How have they been being used on the set?
Oh, well, actually, after we threw them out, actually.
They threw them in the bin. They threw them in the trash.
Start over.
Yeah. They were important. Here's the thing. I want to show those storyboards so bad on the blog.
Yeah.
Really want to do that. They're propped up every scene, every location we're at. We have this big, giant black board with little cutouts of the storyboards pasted all over them. Here's what we're shooting tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I think I'm going to, I've taken a lot of pictures of it, of them. And every time I get ready to post one, I'm like, crap, I'm giving away stuff in the movie. Like, I don't know if I should do this.
Yeah.
But I am going to stick one up there. But, you know, Sony's also kind of watchdogging us a little bit, too, so we have to be kind of careful what we post.
Yeah. I'm sure you can find something that's a little out of context just to see the art style. And I'd love to see, I'm sure people will be really interested to see the stuff that Ray Zone has done with them, you know, the different color levels, just to sort of get an idea of how it's being shot.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, that's right. Let the artist see them.
I'm going to take one of those things. I'm going to take it into Photoshop. I'm going to draw mustaches on all the guys. And I'm going to draw penises and breasts on everybody.
Make it all stick figures.
And then it'll be disguised enough. Very important to the production, and like I said in the blog, and like I said last week talking to Ray, they're ever-present. I mean, sometimes things get shifted. Dave's very, very aware of this, how things work.
Oh, yeah.
Once you get set up on location, you know, it's a base that you springboard off of.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, Tom is sticking as close as he possibly can to him. It's funny because we have, like, a script supervisor that's like, you know, going, he just stays too, you know, ironclad on the storyboards, and he doesn't, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's his vision. That's why he did them.
That's why they're there.
Yeah. I know you've worked with other people. They weren't Tom.
Yeah.
He's a schizophrenic savant. It's a beautiful thing. And then he's got Howard, and David, did Howard work on Mutant Chronicles?
Howard, cameraman.
Howard J. Howard. Smith? Yeah, cameraman.
Camera operator. No, he didn't. No.
I think
he's known, Jeff, I think, has known Howard for quite a while.
Yeah.
They've worked together quite a lot before, and he was like number one choice, I think.
Yeah, you know, he's a extremely creative camera operator. Also could very easily be a DP or a director at some point. He started learning the business from his father, who was a very legendary cameraman, you know, when he was 5 years old. So the kid knows what he's doing. It's pretty fun. And we got Boyle back there, too, so it's like we almost have three directors. Well, we have 12 directors.
I'm sensing that something's going on in England versus Croatia in the background there.
Yeah, 1-0.
Croatia or England?
2-0! No!
So this one won't be on iTunes.
I think Croatia just did something.
Sorry. Was that like two goals in 2 minutes or something?
Put a cotton ball over the microphone.
Sorry, anyway.
It's like that scene in American Werewolf in London where they walk into the slaughtered lamb and, you know, that comment, geez, these guys sure take their darts seriously. It's like that with every sport.
I love the passion.
This is really, really bad.
What just happened?
Anyway, American Wolf in London, my favorite movie of all time, probably. Yeah,
there you go.
Anyway, sorry, you were saying?
I just love the passion of the whole football thing. I think it's just great. I was also going to say, wondering about, I'm sure a lot of people listening are people who are interested in getting into storyboarding, and how would you suggest doing
that?
Run for the hills.
Run!
I mean, you started off pretty classically. You know, you went off on the whole, you know, you have your art degree, but you also started off as a PA and probably just started meeting people. Is that really the best way to do it, do you think?
Sorry, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Get your head back in the game, pal.
Sorry, I'm back. I mean, focus.
I got a soccer game and a sleepy guy. This is great.
Unfortunately, in the film business, it's true. It's who you know. A lot of it is who you know and not what you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're a talentless fuckwit, then I saw again. then you ain't going to get anywhere. But a lot of it is about experience. I mean, when I first started doing it, I worked a lot for free, did a lot of internships and stuff. You've just got to get the experience, and there's no film school like actually being there and doing it. There's nothing that can prepare you for that. So it's just getting your foot in the door, if you're an artist, if you want to do storyboards, getting a really good portfolio together, and just trying to prove to people that you can do it. And unfortunately, storyboards, unlike comic book art, it's about how fast you are as well. You just got to churn it out. It's
right. I was about to say that. I would assume that that's like your key skill, really, is to be fast. Very important.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first started, I'd obsess over it and try and create beautiful. But it's not about pretty pictures. It's the thing about storyboards. They're a lot more functional.
Mm-hmm.
And still now, I get frustrated sometimes, and I'm sure Tim does, a lot of people, and every gig, I wish I had more time, but you can't. It's about hitting deadlines, getting it done, and serving the purpose, and telling a story. If you can tell a story quickly, then great. And taking these images out of the director's head and putting it on paper and capturing moments, and that's what it's really about.
And I would assume also it's a good idea for young guys who are trying to get into this to become pretty knowledgeable in film, you know, to watch a lot of films and see how things are structured. And
Yeah, completely. You need to know about a lot of these editing as well. It's like a paper edit.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing moves and how scenes work, and know your camera angles, know your lenses, know your editing. And yeah, so a lot of that helps a lot, yeah.
Mm.
It's really cool too for I've been working in association with film titles and stuff like that, doing licensed projects for fairly long time, and so inevitably what happens is in reference, when I get sent reference, I'll get maybe some set shots, and it's usually terrible stuff, but sometimes I'll get storyboards too, and it's really fascinating to see what ended up on the screen and what didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're seeing deleted scenes on the paper. It's pretty cool. And, the fun thing about Jane, too, is, and we were talking about this last San Diego, because we were talking about Mike Ploog, and speaking of different guys and different kind of techniques for doing storyboards, some guys do obsess about it, and if you've got an obsessive director, too, and you've got a lot of time on your hands, you know, a Hugh Hudson or a... to a certain degree, Guillermo del Toro, because he gets a lot of pre-production time built into his projects. He's able to hire guys like Leo Durinona and these guys, stupid, man, the amount of detail they put in these things. It's pretty amazing. But he's talking about, Tom's talking about, he wants to find, he wants to track down all of the pieces of Mike Ploog's storyboards for John Carpenter's The Thing and publish it in a book.
Cool.
And, we're talking about the same kind of thing with Dark Country, taking all the production art, taking all the stuff that we did to inspire the film along the way. And that includes the storyboards and all the pre-production art that Dave did. And and publishing it. And I think it's wonderful for especially for young artists, people that want to break in. That's just one facet of what I think an attraction to that kind of book would be, but hopefully we'll see this stuff in print.
I'm hoping it at least shows up on the DVD extras, because especially in this particular film, the 3D process and how important storyboards have been, I think it'd be really cool to have them on the extras for sure.
It's always, everyone's always ambitious about what their extras are going to be, but unless you really, and I think in the case of Tom, who will hammer this stuff home, sometimes stuff gets dropped just for time and simplicity's sake, but
yeah.
I'm hoping there'll be a fairly concise bit of extras when this thing goes to DVD. There's so much, it's like we said last week, there's also, we've got John Repcalvis on set doing EPK, and all this behind-the-scenes stuff in 3D. He's carrying his little 3D rig around everywhere, walking into shots. John, get out of the shot! you're standing in front of the camera. But it's really fun stuff. Really, really fun stuff.
Excellent. I was going to say, how much do you enjoy doing the concept art versus the storyboards? Because I would think that concept art would really allow you to be, well, conceptual and really free to do a lot of different things. Do you enjoy doing that more than storyboards or just different?
I enjoy both, but it's very different. I suppose with concept art, well, in my experience, the concept art has either started at the same time as the storyboards or maybe even earlier, because it's when you kind of start trying to figure out the world that you're in, and it often involves, you know, any creature design, you know, landscapes, environments, of, you know, just this world that you're in. And
you get to let your hair down a little bit when you do concept.
Yeah, you kind of you get to breathe a bit more, because storyboards, as I said, is just you just got to churn them out, you know, page after page. You just got to churn them out. Whereas if you're doing some concepts, you might get to, okay, we've got a creature and a bit of this and a bit of that, spend a bit more time on it and sort of let it breathe a bit more and experiment a bit. And it's kind of nice, which is why Mutant Chronicles is great, because I got to do both, so you can kind of go from one to the other. And yeah, it's fun. It's different, though. It's very different.
Is that fairly normal? Would you get to do both in some films, or do they normally have two different people doing that, or several people working on concepts?
I know, it depends. In terms of the production, I suppose, on the big movies, no, you'd have a whole concept department just purely knocking these things out, and then you'd have, I mean, some of them, I know some of the big movies, you have 2, 3, 4 storyboard guys all taking different scenes, so much more split up.
Cool. Would you ever think about relocating to LA to get closer to that kind of industry, or are you...
I constantly think about it. and especially after spending time there with Tom, and then I was at San Diego.
I was going to say, you're down, I'm in San Diego, so I was at the con with you. Apparently, I never met you, but you were there. So, I mean, yeah, pretty cool place to live.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember meeting you.
I don't think we did.
David was usually down at the field with a pint in his hand.
There you go.
Instead of doing the show.
It's got to spend more time with Thomas and Tim and all the other guys, which is fantastic. And yeah, I think about it a lot. But I'm not sure at the moment, you know, completely relocating. I don't think I could do it right now, but maybe in the future. Yeah.
We had a ball with David at the show. We wanted to kidnap him and not let him go back home.
Yeah.
We were like, you might have to stay.
That worries me.
Oh, please. Good Lord.
Well, I wanted to make sure we talk about anything that's coming up for you. I see, at least as far as IMDb is concerned, your next thing is some movie called Smoke in 2008.
Is there anything you can say about
that? Or?
I have no idea what's going on with that project. The list of things I've worked on which were in development and never saw the light of day is much, much longer than the list of projects that did see the light of day. I've no idea what's going on with that. I think 2 years ago, I went over to Barcelona and spent some time with a fantastic Spanish director called Victor Garcia. I think he's just done the House on Haunted Hill sequel, and he's about to start another one. He did an amazing short film called El Ciclo. CICLO, which got him the gig to do this Smoke thing. It was a supernatural horror movie. Mm-hmm. And I spent some time, did some boards for that, and fuck knows what I'm doing now. It's still in development hell, I suppose.
And so, we have also The Color of Magic, a TV movie.
That's a Terry Pratchett adaptation. Uh-huh. I don't know if you guys know Terry Pratchett, British fantasy writer.
Yeah. It's got a good cast.
Yeah, I did the last one called The Hogfather, which is basically a two-part TV movie, both of them being 2 hours long. It's 2 times feature length. So I did the first one, The Hogfather, and finished the second one called The Color of Magic.
Cool.
What's it called?
Yeah, it's good stuff. The Color of Magic. I think the sci-fi channel might be picking it up for you guys. I don't know.
Huh, cool. It's got Sean Astin, Tim Curry, a lot of people.
No, it's good fun. It's kind of like Monty Python does Lord of the Rings sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah. He's got. I love his way with words, Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, it's good. It's good fun.
Is there anything else coming up you want to pump while you're here?
Anything I want to pump? Well, there's this movie, this kind of noir thriller type thing, and it's got that guy who played the Punisher in it, and that girl from Hostel 2, and I think it's in 3D or something.
Some sort of 3D. Yeah.
Some kind of Hitchcock ripoff in 3D, I don't know. Dark something. It's all right.
I walked into the room this morning. My newspaper was laying at the foot of my door, and I kind of like stiffly bent over to pick it up, and I walked in the room with it. And of course, I always go straight to the arts section of the New York Times, and there's a wonderful little article about The Mist in there today.
Hmm.
That was kind of cool. It's a picture of Tom. You know, like I'm like, hey, wait, we were working with that guy 5 minutes ago.
Don't I know him?
Very cool.
Yeah, it's getting some great reviews. I've seen some online interviews with Frank Darabont and Marsha Gay Harden and stuff. It was pretty cool. And Tom was
I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for it to. I think does it come out this weekend?
Yes, it does. It opens today.
Cool. Well, nothing says Thanksgiving like you know The Mist and death and stuff. So
can I just butt in here? What the hell is it?
It's really an excuse to eat a lot of food and be annoyed by your family. That's sort of what it's evolved into.
But why? What's the history behind it?
The story is that when the pilgrims came over from England in the Mayflower, they had troubles making it here on their own, so the Indians helped them out. And to thank them at the harvest time, they had a big dinner, and then right afterwards told them to get the hell out and put them on reservations and ignored them. But now it's essentially we watch American football and we eat turkey. So that's essentially what it is. We get 2 days off Thursday and Friday.
I want you to think of it this way. We're in deep space, okay? We're going to go colonize a planet, okay?
Yeah.
And we get there, us and our families. And the environment's kind of harsh, it seems. We didn't maybe bring enough supplies, okay? And then maybe there's even some creatures that are threatening us. But there's a native population as well that we didn't think about. Should we be scared of them? Are they going to kill us? No, they come offering food. They save us. We make it through the winter, and we make a holiday. Okay, that's the sci-fi version.
Right.
Wrap your head around that.
Yeah. But it didn't work. It doesn't work out really well in the end for the Indians. So But they have casinos.
Yes, we colonize the planet and we kick the natural inhabitants.
But
we do
teach them how to drink alcohol and have casinos. So that's
and then we pay them lots of money to film on their reservations.
Exactly.
That's what we're doing right now.
Well, I think
Dave, you'll get a kick out of this.
Good.
Just real quick, sorry. Dave, you'll get a kick out of this.
Yep.
I'm making special T-shirts, special Dark Country T-shirts for Howard and Jeffrey.
Right,
it's
right.
It's the Dark Country Camera Department Limey Unit. Yeah, because it's funny because, there was this almost war, this power struggle of egos at the beginning of the film, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, between our, you know, DP and cameraman and mm-hmm. our LA-based effects people.
Right.
Kind of friendly. And if you read Jeff's blog, you'll kind of get the taste of that.
Oh, yeah. I've been reading the blog, and Jeff speaks his mind.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. God bless him for that.
Yeah.
But I'm doing a little caricatures of Jeff and Howard as limes. It's almost like the raisins, but with Jeff Boyle and Howard Smith.
This just cries out for stop motion animation. That'd be great.
Yeah,
I can see the claymation. Yeah.
Well, that's probably all we've got, and I don't want to keep David from the England versus Croatia, which doesn't sound like it's going very well.
No.
But I do want to tell people to go. You need to go see his website.
Hey, what's the score? So it's still
2-0. Oh, 2-0. Wow. That's not good. If England doesn't win, are they out of the World Cup? Or
It's dodgy ground. It is the qualifiers. So,
yeah,
it's
round robin.
It's a crucial game, so they really need to win it. So they are.
Well, it's a long game. There's a long way to go. I also would urge people to go see Dave's website at www.kinetic.com. kinetic-art.com. That's kinetic-art.com, with a great bunch of his stuff and galleries and all sorts of cool stuff. The man is an amazing artist and obviously has a good sense of design, and so it's really exciting. I can't wait to see the storyboards for the 3D stuff. This is going to be great.
Thank you.
So thank you for coming and spending some time with us and waking Tim up from his nap.
We love you,
Dave. No problem. I love you too, Timothy. I'm sorry to wake you up, because I know you need your beauty sleep more than anybody.
Pretty much, yes.
Always have to throw the barb in. That's what friends do, though. They throw a good-natured rib in there. It's like yeah, I wasn't kidding.
So much, not really good-natured so much.
It's a very English thing. I mean, the more I take the piss out of you, I don't know, what's your phrase? The more I screw with you, it means the more I like you.
I like the piss
part. It's endearing.
You guys have all the great phrases, take the piss out. And
yeah, the more I take the piss out of you, it's actually a kind of backwards way of saying, yeah, I really like it.
It's the dog's bollocks, you know.
It's the bollocks. I take it as a compliment.
Yeah. I love, one of my favorite comedians, Eddie Izzard, so I love hearing all those great things. So.
Great, great.
All right, well, thank you, David, for stopping by. That's great.
No problem. Thank you very much. It's
go England.
Fun.
Yeah. So, Tim, I'll talk to you soon. Go get some sleep, man.
I'll see you guys.
All right. Go find more interviews. Go get Ron Perlman.
Sweet dreams, everyone.
Adios.
Bye-bye. Cheerio.
Hey, but still, you know, Tom.
Yeah?
What movie challenge you got for me this week?
Movie challenge.
Are we still on or what?
Well, we're sort of on. We can continue talking. You're free to go if you want to watch your soccer game. Tim and I will just sit here and annoy each other.
We usually do the show is over, but then somehow we inevitably get back onto a topic of conversation, so we fade the music back out and continue, which I love.
And Tim is a savant at like knowing weird movies and can name like 10 people in the cast from bizarre movies.
Oh, I know. I've heard about this. Although one thing came up in one of your previous shows, you were talking about Life Force. I fucking love Life Force.
That's
a great fucking movie.
People got a lot of good response for Life Force. Yeah,
our graffiti wall that we had to take off had I like to throw on like character names from obscure films, so I actually had one from Nighthawks on there. Deke De Silva was scrawled across the wall.
You mentioned the movie, so let's see how many people can you name from Nighthawks.
I know there's an obscure character actor in there that I know. But let's start out with the obvious ones.
Right.
There's Sylvester Stallone.
That's one.
There is Billy Dee Williams.
Uh-huh.
There is the woman I had a crush on when I was a kid, because I was a huge, obviously, you know, child of the 70s, fan of the $6 Million Man.
Gotta love.
Lindsay Wagner.
Gotta love Lindsay Wagner.
She was adorable to me. Please. Yeah. Oh, good God. But now she pitches, like, I don't know, like some kind of
the
bed.
Sleep number bed, yes.
Yes, it's a sleep number bed. Because, you know, there's pain involved sometimes. there's Persis I don't know if I pronounce her name right. Persis Kambada.
Well
who
done.
Was also in Star Trek, the motion
That's
picture,
right.
You'll remember. She was, wasn't she Miss India?
She was Miss India, and she died a few years ago, actually.
You're kidding.
No, yeah, she was like, and she was young. She was like 44 or something like that. Yeah,
she
was the bald chick, and she had a heart attack in 1998.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And she was also in this movie with, I think it was Barry Bostwick, Megaforce or something like that. I remember paying money to see that at the theater when I was a kid.
Yeah. And yeah, she was 47 when she died of a massive heart attack, it says.
Good Lord, I had no clue.
All right, who else? We got four so far.
Oh, well, of course, this was also one of Rutger Hauer's first movies
Rutger
in the U.S.
Hauer. Good job.
Rutger Hauer playing the main bad guy, Wolfgar. Wolfgar, call it.
He even knows the names. I love it.
Oh, Wolfgar, please.
How could you forget Wolfgar? Yeah, that's
huge. True. You know, if you were a fan of Blade Runner, you know, it's like you paid extra sensory perception detail to anything Rutger Hauer did. And that was one of them. I think the only other guy I can think of is one of my favorite kind of character actors, Joe Spinell.
Joe Spinell.
He's in a lot of mafia type stuff, but also a wonderful horror movie called Maniac.
Can you name who directed?
I want to say Dirk Bogarde. It's Nigel Davenport, I think, is in that too.
Nigel Davenport. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's
killed early in the movie.
6 or 7. Very impressive. Very impressive. And you got? Did you say the second lead?
I don't.
I got Stallone. Billy Dee Williams. Yeah, I'm not sure if you said
Billy
Dee. Yeah, Billy Dee.
Yeah.
Who directed?
Oh, that's going to get me with my pants down.
That's a tough one.
I have no idea who directed it.
A gentleman by the name of Bruce Malmuth.
Bruce Malmuth, he did a ton of stuff, and I have no idea who Bruce Malmuth is. Did he direct again?
I did some TV. He did an episode of Beauty and the Beast, so Ron Perlman might know him.
Oh, because so many actors remember the
TV director. Yeah.
It's funny that we had a gal that's working on this movie, working the second camera, who worked on Beauty and the Beast. It was her first job.
Oh, wow.
And she was having a very fun conversation with Ron last night.
He also directed Hard to Kill with Steven Seagal. So he's
Hard to Kill.
Very exciting. Cool. Yeah. Well, I think you passed that test. You did Nighthawks. You got 7 names. Most impressive.
Not bad.
Too bad. Not too bad.
There's not a whole lot of.
Okay, I got one for you. What year?
What year? What?
Oh,
what year was it made?
Nighthawks.
What year was it? Nighthawks. What year was it released?
That's 81 easily.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I used to, when I was at college, I used to have a similar thing with my mates. It was they could name any film, and I could tell them the year. And this was days before. Days before internet, and I had these movie guides, like movie encyclopedia, which listed all the movies, and they'd go through and they'd look it up, and then they'd start just picking random movies. They'd name the year, and I'd get them.
It's like Daniel Stern and Diner, where Daniel Stern knows all the B-sides to every record, and he knows the label, and he knows the year. Yeah, that's awesome. When I was talking to Boyle last night, because I made some quote, I quoted, there's lots of cactus and lots of dangerous crap out in the desert, and so somebody'll run into a cactus, and last night I just commented, I said, stick to the roads, stay off of the moors. and Jeff kind of chuckled, and I said, did you spot that? And he goes, yeah, isn't that, I said, yeah, it's American Werewolf in London. And he's like, you know, I was in American Werewolf in London. I was like, why? He goes, yeah, I think it was called American Werewolf in London. Jeff's memory. I'm like American Werewolf in London, like 81, 82, John Landis straight. He goes, yeah, that's it. I said, what did you play in that movie? He said, well, I was a cameraman. He got a call, and he just showed up on the set with his camera, and then he just ran through a scene with his camera like he was shooting it. Like he was filming it. I said,
I'm going to ask him about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, was it in the streets of London? I mean, because there's the part where the theater kind of rushes out into the street and the werewolf runs amok. Eventually there's like media coverage, but I can't think of another instance in the movie where there's like a cameraman.
Unless at the end when he's lying in the alleyway. No, that's just, I mean, just the sirens, the flashing lights of the police cars, I think.
I think Jeff ended up on the cutting room floor is what happened.
Probably. How's he doing over there?
He's very tired. And,
is he behaving himself?
Yeah, for the most part. I'm going to take him shopping here in about an hour. I was actually supposed to go in and look at Russia's at noon, and I've missed that. So,
how's the 3D stuff looking? I saw on the blog that you guys got to see some of it.
The 3D stuff is mind blowing.
Cool,
and it's not even complete yet. I mean, as far as the 3D and what we're shooting is concerned, but we have plagues to knock in, Starfields and Heat Lightning and effects and all this stuff. So even at the base where it's at right now, and there's some shots that aren't going to have all that, like stuff that's interior hotel room stuff. And we were looking at some of that stuff in 3D, and it's just unbelievable the depth that this digital technology has. And Max Penner, who is our kind of 3D imaging tech, he's a real artist. Along with Jeff and Howard, our other artists, we have Max in there, and he basically runs the whole 3D part of it while we're filming. And he tweaks the inner ocular, the distance between the two cameras, and which also alters the perception of the frames, and it's very subtle. But without him, we'd have some fairly, if you can, you know, wrap your head around this, flat 3D. It just wouldn't be as dynamic. And so he's got his little device that he holds in his hand that he operates like a surgeon while we're shooting these frames, where he runs the inner ocular. It's pretty amazing. It's just stunning. I mean, with the richness of the, you know, we're going for this really kind of desaturated, graded down feel in this movie, but with the little tweaks of color we have kind of brushed in, bounced in, all the hard shadows, David, you'll totally understand what I'm talking about here, with all the film noir kind of referencing, yeah, and research that we did. On a ton of our favorite movies, from you know, like Dark Passage to I was going for Orson Welles there. I always forget the name of that movie.
The Third Man.
This is that one movie that's in my dead zone.
The Third Man.
I can never remember the title of it when I want to access it.
The Third Man.
No, it's the one we did with Chuck Heston that.
Touch of Evil.
Yeah, Touch of Evil.
Touch of Evil, yeah.
The classic tracking shot.
Yeah, the opening shot.
Yeah, and it's funny because we have something very, not similar to that, but a similar idea where we have this long, you know, really long single tracking shot in the film, very much inspired by what they did on that, but a different shot. But yeah, I mean, just like walls of shadow, shadows in the foreground with the background lit up, and I mean, it's just... People talk, and I think I said this in my blog too. People talk about, you know, when they're doing their film. Oh, this is a film noir. We're updating the film noir genre. But you look at 90% of the people that say shit like that. You look at the work that they put out, and it's not even close. This movie's kind of right on the head. This is where, I mean, we're going to back up that statement here. And you know, we got Boyle, so. You know. The rushes are just amazing, and they're processed pretty far, so we're looking at real complete stuff in some cases, and it's just mind blowing. Very exciting. I was always one of those people that never really saw 3D work very well, because I was, like we talked about last week, I was sitting in the theater during Space Hunter: The Adventures of or Space Hunter's Adventure in the Forbidden Zone, where I found out through Ray Zone that there was a glitch with the 3D in that, and it didn't really work, which explains why halfway through the movie I just took my glasses off because I couldn't take it anymore. So I just never had seen 3D work very well, but I mean, seeing this work, and also with Bad Planet, I'd never really been that appreciative of 2D, you know, like you know, looking at a comic book in 3D until Ray did our Bad Planet book. It literally jumped off the page for me once I turned the glasses around the right way. So it's pretty cool.
That does help, yeah.
Yeah, it does help. Yeah, yeah. Right over left.
Cool. Well, gentlemen, I must run.
I'm done boring you.
No, you're never boring. Never boring. Except when you're asleep and we're asking you questions. That's okay.